We have Zoidberg on the phone now to have a chat to us about what went down in Melbourne last night at the... would you call it a counter-protest?
I suppose that sort of insinuates that Milo and his mates were actually having a bit of a rally, but no, I think it was more a blockade and a protest of the event itself.
Okay. So Milo Yiannopoulos was born in 1984. He also is written under the pen name Milo Andreas Wagner. He's a British political commentator, a publisher, media personality, blogger, journalist, and author, and he is associated with the alt-right. He was the editor of Breitbart News, which is a right-wing news, but he was actually fired from that job. He's a critic of feminism, Islam, social justice, and so-called political correctness and other movements. He's currently on tour around Australia with his show, The Troll Academy, and he's moving his way around the country, and everyone was looking at Melbourne. At least anarchists were looking at the Melbourne event to see what was going down. So, Zoidberg, what did go down in Melbourne?
Mr. Yiannopoulos and his mates had to keep everything very hush-hush for a very long time because they knew that they would immediately be met by a welcoming party of people who weren't terribly happy to see him welcomed here by the police and our parliament and everything else. So we got messages late in the afternoon telling us that the venue was down in Kensington, which is just outside the CBD by maybe 2 kilometres or so. And there are a couple of shows scheduled through the day as well. So one was due to take part at 6:15 and 8:30 and 10:15 or something along those lines. It all became a little bit lost in the details once we were actually on the ground. I think I got down there around about 6:30 and the police were already out in force. So they had a number of normal beat coppers who were providing a cordon, and they also had the riot squad, which is known as the public order response team, I think it is, port for short at the very least, providing some rather heavily armoured support as well. So they were lining up. They were trying to provide some protection for those people who were lining up to get into the venue. And the protesters were then on the outside of that police line with the banners, the loud hailers and posters and all that sort of thing.
So the protest sort of had been organised, but the venue hadn't been organised. How many groups were involved in organising the protest?
Usually what's been happening with the anti-fascist stuff is that there's been a wider group called CAST, the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, which has been a coalition of various groups, so Socialist Alternative, the Alliance, various anarchist groups have been linked in there as well, part of a sort of spokesmodel, some various independent activists, the Socialist Equality Party's also been there. I stopped being heavily involved in that sort of scene a little while ago just because I've been trying to finish off some studies and, you know, it used to be relatively democratic with the various groups involved. It has morphed a bit, but most of the same faces are still there. So it's a conglomeration of your more Trotskyist socialists and the anarchists in Melbourne as well.
We're going to talk about what happened and then we sort of come back to the CAF thing, the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism. So you were playing a role as a street medic as well?
Yeah, so there was a call out by CAF for some street medics to attend as the usual anarchist crew who provides that support. I'm not sure what was going on, but they weren't providing that support initially. I was a little bit concerned because having been involved in the street medic movement and all that sort of thing, knowing the training, it's, you know, it's as much as you just need a first aid certificate, it's not your usual operating environment. So with that sort of experience, I was a little bit concerned to go down there and provide some support. So I wasn't officially crossed up, and there were a couple of other people like myself who were also helping out. alongside the officially crossed up street medics and all that sort of thing. And we established a triage spot about 30 metres down from where the main protest was, so it was a little bit safe if we needed to evacuate someone and also away from the police as well. Rather amusingly, we did have a bunch of coppers run over to us at one point because they realised that we were sitting in between their unmarked police cars and spitting out and getting all the various bits of mucus that are produced when you've been hit by pepper spray. And I think they thought we were fiddling with their cars or something, but honestly, unless you count putting mucus all over their tyres, nothing nefarious was going on there. So we were based a little bit away from the main action, and after we could see that the protest was pushing further into the actual main road, Racecourse Road, we were feeling a little bit isolated, and a couple of our friends were on the other side amongst the Housing Commission, amongst the people who were living in the area, actually said that the police were becoming quite aggressive and they were providing some community support. When we heard that the police had pushed into the community line and they'd actually sprayed a whole pile of people, we then disbanded the triage spot at that place, came around the corner and met up with the community housing flat.
So it sounds a bit hard to picture this, but there were the people going to the Milo event, and then there were kind of like nationalists, like the United Patriots Front or True Blue or something, and then there were the left-wing sort of people. Is that sort of how it happened?
Look, it's all a bit confusing. I must admit that I had the fortunate thing of being quite towards the back for the first half of the march, so I didn't actually have to have the misfortune of looking upon the fascists and all that sort of thing. I did see Neil Erickson's mate, Ricky, whatever his face is, getting walked away by police after being doused head to toe in OC spray. And we thought he was actually going to be put in the back of a van and taken off to be processed, like one of the anti-fascists was. But he reappeared about half an hour later, completely washed clean, having a nice old chat with the Vicpol coppers, and then was let to go of his own accord. So it didn't actually seem that he'd been charged or arrested or anything else like that, which, considering the footage that they showed when one of our mates was attacked at the refugee rally, I think it was last weekend, having a nice chummy chat with the coppers as well, sort of does make you wonder a bit about the rumours that Neil Erickson is mate the police informant.
So that was, someone got their head smashed in or the face smashed in at the refugee rally. We're going to go to a quick song, then we'll come back and chat to you more. This is an appropriate song. I think it's called The Day the Nazi Died, and it's by a Chumbawamba.
Antifaschismusband, vielleicht wissen Sie das schon. Und dies ist ein Antifaschismuslied.
Before that after the war, the Nazis vanished without a trace. But battalions of fascists to dream of a master race. The history books they tell of their defeat in 45. They all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died.
They say the prisoner of Spandau was a symbol of defeat. Whilst Hess remained in prison, then the fascists they would beat.
So the promise of an Aryan world would never materialise. So why did they all come out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died? The world is riddled with maggots, the maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every
with Chumbawamba and The Day the Nazi Died. If you're on Subversion 1312, and we're talking to Zoidberg from Melbourne, and we've been talking about the protests against Milo and what went down. Now we're going to quickly talk about why all this happened. And there's the other thing that people say, and Mark may have said this to me too, he wants people to protest. What do you say to that?
It is something I've debated over. I think most of us have debated over about whether it was appropriate to have a counter-protest for a guy who models himself as a troll and all that sort of thing. But the difference is that he's not just some jackass on the internet who's saying rude things. He's actually someone who has the potential to cause a lot of harm, and he's linked in with some very nasty people as well. His potential to actually cause disruption and harm to the ordinary lives of people is quite large, and particularly when he's going on recruiting tours around Australia and everything else, he's linked in with Richard Spencer.
He's going into Parliament House.
Yeah.
Yes, he's been invited to chatting with some of the MPs as well, and wouldn't you be surprised that it was mostly One Nation people who attended his little meeting up there. He is someone that does deserve some sort of response, to be shut down and to actually be, made clear that what he's saying is not welcome. One of the big factors that got me out on the street was seeing the photograph of Clem Ford, the writer and feminist, who... Yeah. They found a photograph of her when she was 15, and I don't know if I can actually say this word on late night radio, but they
you can.
Unfuckable.
Unfuckable. Good.
Yeah.
So, across her face as a continuation of this feminism is cancer theme. And these are people who, these thoughts don't exist in isolation. This translates to violence, be it through harassment or actual physical violence against people in their own lives or people they come across in the street. So particularly when he's being supported by local Nazis and fascist groups down here who have targeted anti-fascists, who've targeted normal people, housing commissions. They've actually just been convicted for going up to Bendigo and performing a mock beheading to strike fear into the local Muslim community. The actual impact of his actions could be quite large.
Yeah, and he's a dangerous person.
Yeah, and not to give him too much credit, I mean, he does like to pump himself up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But even if it's not him directly, the stuff that he's promoting certainly is worrying to have promoted around the place.
And I was talking to Mark before that he's gay. Well, apparently he's gay and he's Jewish. And so he's kind of got these elements to him that make it like he could say, oh, you're being anti-Semitic or you're being homophobic, or even, and he has a black boyfriend apparently too. So there's it's kind of like dimensions.
He's someone apparently who hates identity politics, but he lives it day to day. And yes, he's married a black man. Yes, he's a Jew, but... as someone I've seen on Facebook earlier today said, saying that he can't be racist or he can't be anti-Semitic or he can't be a fascist is sort of like saying that you can't be a wife beater because you're married. That logic doesn't actually follow through if you really take a close look at it. If he's, he might identify as Jewish, but if he's also then doing a gig to support Richard Spencer and they're all there doing their Steve Hiles and everything else, that does raise some fairly big questions about where his allegiances lie.
I just don't understand what the white nationalists like about him, considering he is gay and he is Jewish.
I was wondering even if they know that he's gay. Like, they'd be totally homophobic.
Yeah.
Well, that is one reason why he fell out with quite a bit of the alt-right during the Trump campaign, because they thought that he was not quite fitting into their little microcosm of people that they liked. But, Milo's only one part of the thing, and to be quite honest, I'd be quite happy for him to disappear into the ether of shitty celebrities that we don't ever have to think about again.
Yeah, hopefully people realise he's quite inconsequential. Now, there's this thing with the Melbourne cops. They're getting, like, pimped out. And you're seeing it at the refugee protests and then at the Milo protests too. Like, what is the deal with that?
So I moved to Victoria in 2009 from Adelaide. And Adelaide was one of the last places where cops actually got handguns. There is a very strong connection to that British model of unarmed police by, the term is policing by consent, which is a total nonsense, but there you go. So I've always found the Victorian policing culture a little bit peculiar, but even back then, up until about 2012, it was still pretty unusual to see a beat copper wearing a handgun or other weapons because it just wasn't necessary. But since that time, thanks to Ken Lay, the former Chief Commissioner, all police are now required to carry a handgun with them at all times. So, yeah, whenever you see a cop now, they are carrying at least a bat on, probably a small thing of OC spray and also a handgun. So it's, yeah, not a very calming influence on the situation.
They're keeping us safe. They're keeping us safe. Like, if they've got all that, if they come across a bad guy, then everything will be fine.
Well, I mean...
Sarcasm. Well,
yeah. And police and security guards operate on a system of domination. And in previous work, I was actually speaking to someone who was a security guard trainer, and they were saying, this is the whole point, that you try to control the situation by dominating it. And that actually doesn't work in many cases, but also it's why the police keep on amping up their responses, because if carrying a handgun doesn't get a suitable fear response, then you've got to go one step higher. And you've got to get everyone in the dark uniforms to instill fear. And if that doesn't work, then you bring in a new riot squad. And if that doesn't work, you put them in armour. And if still even that doesn't work, then you bring out the shields and the helmets. So over the last 2 years or so, they've taken port, this riot squad, from a fairly small unit of people to almost like an expansion of normal beat policing. Their rapid response, they've got all these fancy vehicles, they do nightclub patrols, so Fridays and Saturday nights you won't just have normal police walking down the street to check in on things and manage the crowd, you actually have the riot squad deployed. And they've very recently got all this body armour, which is pretty pointless. It actually doesn't protect them from anything. If you look at it quite closely, its most effective point is actually just protecting the various bits of the body that they're using to kick other people. And last night, for the first time since the Occupy Melbourne eviction, they actually brought out their helmets and their shields as well. So I actually haven't seen that since 2011, and that is quite confronting to see, because the shields are used as weapons, the helmets stop them getting from hit by anything, and to go with the shields, they bring out their massive truncheons as well.
I remember that at F11 in 2000.
The police were doing last night was a little bit of OC spray to try and get the crowd to move away. They did that two or three times, I think, but they realised that they really didn't have much control over the situation, so they upgraded to the shields and helmets. And if they formed a line, they would either walk or run forward, bashing on their shields with their sticks to try and scare people. And, you know, for some people it was quite scary, but as someone else has mentioned, the more gear they put on, the more fearful the cops seem to be. And you can see them shaking where they were because they knew that, you know, they weren't in control of the situation. By the point you're having to put your box down your pants and put a stick in your hands, you've really lost the plot.
So, talking about that sort of thing, there was an issue with the people came out of the Housing Commission flats and got involved, and obviously I guess they weren't really expecting to have this huge thing happen, and then there is a feeling that they were sort of left vulnerable by certain members of the protest.
Yeah, so the venue itself was directly across the road from, I think there's four or five housing commission towers in Kensington. And obviously, as most people would, if you can hear all the sirens and traffic stopped and there's a million police about the place, you come out the front and see what the hell is going on. And as they were coming out, people were explaining to them what Milo was about, who the various groups were, and the fact that You know, these were people who honestly believed that all Muslims are rapists and want to kill everyone and deserve to either be exterminated or expelled from the country. So obviously they said, well, that's not on, and some of them joined in the protest as well. It was quite a mix of people, different ethnicities, different ages, different genders as well, but you know, these people were quite glad to get involved in the protest in the large part, and talking to one or two of them, they actually said that in one case, after they'd spent over a decade and a half living in a refugee camp, they were quite glad to see that their home had people in it who were willing to defend them, to actually say that they were welcome and that they were part of the community as well. They weren't expecting that, I don't think, and they were quite glad to have that support. The difficulty was that as the night went on, it turned into one of those sort of stalemates. Nothing really was being, like, we were sitting there chanting and making noise and all that sort of thing, and the police were standing there doing their blue steel gruff impressions and everything else, but nothing was really happening. The police wanted to clear things out because their primary objective is to try and get rid of anything that might cause a ruckus. So they started pushing against the crowd to try and clear them out. And that involved actually coming down the main driveway and across some of the gardens in the house in Flat Estates as well. Now, the Assistant Commissioner of Police, who was in charge of that operation, did a media conference this morning, actually said that police did not enter the flats at all and stayed on Racecourse Road. And that's total and utter crap. There's plenty of video and photographs of the coppers in the middle of the housing estate, gardens, driveway. So they certainly made an incursion upon those people's houses. And there was a feeling amongst some of the protesters that things had become unsafe. The message had been put across that Milo wasn't welcome. They disrupted the proceedings. From what I understand, Milo even refused to take questions from the crowd as well. So in that sort of sense, it had been successful. The difficulty is that the decision to then leave the protest, in practice, what that translated to was this large body of protesters who had come to the street and this community just suddenly up and leaving. And I gather there was some conversation with some of the main marshals between them and some of the elders of the communities and some of the people involved there about, you know, we don't feel it's safe. It's time for us to leave, and we'd suggest that, you know, you find somewhere safe to be as well. But that wasn't communicated the whole way through. And I did hear a couple of people, and I was speaking to a couple of people who said that they'd had left-wing white activists come up to them and say, it's not safe here, you need to go home. To which their response was, well, this is my home.
Mm.
Initially, I supported some people with the medics. We had to evacuate some people who had been pepper sprayed, so we wanted to get them out while the main mass of the crowd was disappearing. But once we'd left that main part of the body, the housing estate, we said, no, we actually need to go back in. We felt very uncomfortable because we didn't know if everyone had come out, and we could hear that the residents were still there. The police were making all sorts of noises and they were still hanging around in the housing estate as well. And we knew that it was upon us, the people who'd come into that location, to provide support and solidarity to those residents. It's unfair of us to say, you know, it's great for all these brown and black people to come out and support us and take our placards or get involved. You know, they've got agency to show that, yes, they hate Milo and they have the right to exist here as well. But as soon as it becomes unsafe for us, we're not going to provide that support. And I think a lot of the people who remained behind felt very similarly as well.
Thanks very much for talking to us tonight, Gladeberg. I think at the end, the joining up of the communities was a positive thing.
Absolutely. It was an amazing experience to meet these people, to talk with them. We had someone even bring down a pot of tea that we had tea with while the protest was going on. There's some remarkable and amazing people. The stories that they've got, the strength that they've got, is stuff that just, it's eye-opening. So, yeah, they're amazing people to have been able to meet and share that space with. There will be some follow-up from Flemington Kensington Legal and a couple of the activist legal groups as well. There may also be a call-out for donations to the Solidarity and Defence Fund. So if people hang around Facebook, that sort of thing, there might be some opportunities for those of you who are up in nice sunny Brisbane, maybe to provide some support in that more material way as well.
Great. Thanks so much for talking to us, and we hope to talk to you again. You could be our Melbourne correspondent.